program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, July 20th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here. We got a great show on this Hemp Day Hump Day, and as usual, joining us here in the studio, the whole crew is here. We start off with the pirate Ganja John on the boards.
What's up, Russ? How you doing?
I'm doing great. You've recovered from your birthday?
Yes, I have.
Everything is A-okay.
A-okay. We're good.
Glad to hear it. Also hanging out in the studio with us is Wiz Calico himself. How you doing, Calico?
Quite well. Thank you. Glad to be back.
All right. Calico for Congress. Everyone check that out. We're going to get one of our own in Congress, man. We're going to do it. Calico, F-O-R, Congress.com.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
Check that out. Also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is our own Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, everyone.
So you let me know on the chat there that you're getting quite the workout being carless in Astoria.
You know, it's really been a blessing. It's so nice to walk around my beautiful town, and I'm getting some bike riding in, something I don't normally do.
Yeah, and you know, we've got it really lucky out here in the Pacific Northwest. I understand people in the Midwest right now are suffering through triple-digit heat wave, and here in July in Portland, what was it, like 66 degrees yesterday?
66, yeah.
Something like that. How's it? Something similar in Astoria, I assume.
Yeah, here in July in Oregon, it's March.
Exactly. We're experiencing March in July. Carrie's got our hemp headlines for us that we do after the first break. So, Carrie, what do we got in the news today?
Well, you know, we've got some great news coming out of New Jersey. Can't wait to tell you all about that. Also, Montana opponents of their new restrictive law are getting busy to put some stuff on the ballot. And since it's a Health Wednesday, I've got a new study from Australia. It says some of the old stuff, but in a new way.
All right. Great stuff coming up in the headlines. And speaking of those headlines, I will be in Montana this weekend for Marijuana Aid in Missoula. So check that out. Visit MontanaNormal.org for all the information. Also, want to give a shout out to Ed Foreman from the Ed Foreman Show. I was there last night at Dante's, one of the clubs downtown Portland, and was a guest on his interesting show. He's kind of has a lounge lizard talk show. It's got a band, couches, and everything. And they told me it will be podcast on Cascadia.fm. So look for the Ed Foreman Show on Cascadia.fm. Now, today is Ivy Wednesday, so for our Daily Toker Tunes today, we're going to bring you some music from Catch a Fire, and the song is appropriately called Irie. So we'll get to that right at 20 after the hour. And then at half past, well, of course, it's Cannabis Science Day with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. So we're going to talk to him about a couple of those studies that have come out from Australia, one good, one bad, and take your calls and chat questions here live. And then at the end of the show in the last segment, we've got a live guest stopping by the studio, Matt from Cannabliss, our favorite cannabis club here in Portland, Oregon. He's here to talk about the cannabis industry and the latest Attorney General memo. All that and more right after this.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapist will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Did you know there are more tokers than Texans? Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, host of Normal Show Live. It's true, there are more adults who will consume cannabis in America this year than the population of Texas. This and thousands of other statistics and polls are part of my new book, Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts, including 19 full-color poster-sized infographics of cannabis data.
A entirely legitimate topic for debate.
If we're going to have that debate, we need the facts. But Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts isn't just some listing of statistics and tables. It's truly a big book, a huge weatherproof binder that becomes its own 12 by 18 presentation easel. The colorful charts are jam-packed with facts that draw interest, and the explanatory text is all rigorously researched from reputable sources. You can make the case against prohibition with the government's own numbers. You can learn more about Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts by visiting stash.normal.org/bigbook. Pre-orders are available, and shipping begins September 1st, 2011. That's stash.normal.org/bigbook.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
We have been covering the medical marijuana law in New Jersey as it was legislated in, only to watch the New Jersey Governor Chris Christie put the brakes on the entire program to await an approval from the federal government. New Jersey passed the most restrictive medical marijuana program yet, giving only those that have the most serious or terminal diseases the right to use marijuana for medical reasons with impunity. That is what's made it so difficult, as those that could have benefited from cannabis have actually been dying as they've been waiting for a year and a half for legislatures to allow them the right to seek out side effect free relief from symptoms. On Tuesday, Governor Christie did an about face on his stance to restrict the implementation of the law by announcing that he believes the state's narrow initiative would not run afoul of federal prosecutors and gave a green light to the program. New Jersey's 6 approved dispensaries could be open by the end of the year and serve patients who have MS, terminal cancer, and other serious conditions that are not responding to other treatments. It was just last month that Governor Christie said he wouldn't move forward with the program until he received assurance that no one involved in the program would be prosecuted for participating. It may have been the June 29th Justice Department memo that reiterated that small and focused state programs would not be a top priority for law enforcement that changed his mind. The law in the New Jersey program does not allow patients or caregivers to grow their own medicine. They can only have a 2-ounce supply every 30 days, and THC limits in the plants will be capped at 10%, the strangest clause in the law that will force growers to limit their plants' potential or seek out weaker strains. 92 doctors from 19 different counties have already registered with the program, a requirement before they can recommend a patient might benefit from cannabis. The dispensaries will be quite a drive for some residents, taking more than hours each way, and patients will have to pay $200 to register. Governor Christie, who spent 7 years as a federal prosecutor himself, said that he now believes that federal prosecutors have more important crimes to pursue and will not bother the state's program as long as dispensaries operate to the letter of the law. Although he never did receive the assurance he was seeking, he told reporters yesterday that allowing the program to finally move forward was a risk he is now willing to take as a governor. So, finally, a step in the right direction for New Jersey, and congratulations to all the hardworking activists who never let up the pressure.
This is completely a politically calculated decision by New Jersey Governor Christie, who's got intentions on moving beyond the governor's mansion in New Jersey and moving to higher office at a federal level. He's even floated the idea of possible presidential run. And I think he just took a look at the polls and realized, oh, damn, about 70% of the United States thinks I'm an idiot for stopping medical marijuana here. So I think this is all political calculation, because as you mentioned, really nothing changed as far as the federal government's stance on people that are providing medical cannabis. The same argument that Arizona Governor Jan Brewer is making and trying to stop dispensaries from being installed in Arizona is what would affect the dispensaries in New Jersey. Even though the New Jersey program is more restrictive, that doesn't change the kernel of truth here, which is that the federal government wants to go after anybody who makes cannabis a business. It's not the medical marijuana they've got a problem with. It's not the cancer patient or the person in the wheelchair smoking a doobie. It's the guy that's selling him the doobie that might be making a buck and then plowing that money back into the movement and, you know, getting candidates to run against people like Christie, people to run in these primary elections. It's the power of the medical marijuana industry they fear. And Christie turning around on this, again, just a political calculation, and this, we've gone many times over this New Jersey program and its ridiculously restrictive regulations. Six dispensaries in a state of 9 million people, the most densely packed state in the United States, and you're going to have six whole dispensaries. We'll keep our eye on New Jersey to let you know what's happening in the No Garden State, but don't think that this is a good move by Christie in that he was doing it out of the goodness of his heart. Now, it is a good move for those of us in the movement, as it does put a governor on record as receiving these, well, I don't know that he received the U.S. attorney letters, but, you know, those U.S. attorney letters that have been going out and threatening these people that have the medical marijuana dispensaries. After that, we now have a governor going on record opposing that, so we'll take that silver lining.
Montana's recent strict and newly replaced medical marijuana law was passed by the legislature this year to replace the voter initiative law that had been on the books since 2004. Well, now opponents of the legislatures that passed the sneaky move said they are well on their way to gathering enough signatures to put the measure before the voters once again on the 2012 ballot in the general election. The thriving caregiver industry that occurred in Montana had created somewhat of a backlash against medical marijuana. Now, those in the industry that have been squeezed out of a legal medical cannabis market says that they are ready for a fight with the launch of Referendum 124 that seeks to overturn the controversial Senate Bill 423. Lawmakers in Montana passed Senate Bill 423 in just the last few days of the legislative session this year. It replaced the current Montana Medical Marijuana Act with a highly restrictive bill that would have effectively lowered the number of participants in the program from around 30,000 to about 2,000. Already, the new law is being held up in the courts, where a Helena judge temporarily blocked portions of it. District Judge James Reynolds refused to block the entire law, as cannabis activists statewide were hoping, but he did strike down several major provisions of the law. He blocked the provision that would have forbidden caregivers to charge patients for medical, or to charge patients for their medical marijuana. Providers can now continue to charge patients for medical cannabis. The new law also tried to restrict the number of patients a caregiver could care for. The old law had no limits, and the new law wanted a limit of 3 patients. That part was blocked as well, and so now caregivers can still have as many patients as they wish. A ban on advertising was also struck down, since medical marijuana is a legal substance, therefore its advertising can't be duly restricted. And lastly, and maybe most importantly, Judge Reynolds blocked the provision that would have allowed law enforcement officials to make unannounced inspections of the premises where providers were growing medical marijuana. These searches will not be allowed for the time being. In his ruling, he said, quote, "The ban on providers receiving compensation and limiting the number of cardholders that each provider can serve will certainly limit the number of willing providers and will thereby deny the access of Montanans otherwise eligible for medical marijuana to this legal product, and thereby denying these persons the fundamental right of seeking their health in a lawful manner." Now, Senator Dave Wassenaar, a Democrat from Missoula, called out the Republicans that voted in the new medical marijuana law, saying, quote, "Each time we had a vote, I asked, are you sure this is what the voters want?" And he said the Republican majority said yes to that question each time it was asked, despite the fact that the bill changed significantly from vote to vote. He added, "The legislature has no business second-guessing the voters. Please support Referendum 124 in Montana and sign it if you already haven't."
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, what kind of democracy do we live in here? Of course, you know, we live in a democratic republic. We have these representatives at legislators who make laws in general, just because most of the laws that are going on, the majority of the people could really give a crap about, you know, county zoning this and water rights that. There's a whole bunch of minutiae of governance that, yeah, the republic, you know, let's let our legislators take care of that. But in the 26 states that have these initiative procedures where the people can write their own laws and vote them in, that should be sacrosanct. There should be no legislative body overturning the laws written by the people themselves and voted in by a greater than 60% majority in the case of Montana. We're talking like 62%, I believe, when they passed that. What in the hell does the legislature think they are doing going back and trying to overturn the will of the people? And as far as the judge blocking parts of this law, well, thanks for the favor here, but having to block them restricting First Amendment rights and abrogating Fourth Amendment rights, allowing unannounced searches of providers that are growing cannabis? I mean, come on. Well, thanks for protecting our First and Fourth Amendment rights, but this should have never been in question in the first place. I really hope the people of Montana band together on this referendum 124 and get this stupid law overthrown. It's time to restore the will of the people and understand that, yes, we knew what we were voting for when we were voting for medical marijuana. We were voting for sick and disabled people to have easy and safe access to a medicine that is far better for them than all the pharmaceuticals they've been prescribed combined. It's time to recognize that. I encourage you to visit montananormal.org. I'm sure they'll have more information on referendum 124 and get your signature on it today.
A new article in Time magazine highlights a study that says marijuana has little long-term effects on learning and memory. Other research have made this claim before. In this study, though, participants were aged 20 to 24 at the beginning of the study that was part of a larger study on community health. Researchers categorized them as light, heavy, former, or non-users of marijuana. Light was defined as smoking only monthly or less, and heavy use was weekly or more. Former users had to have not smoked for at least a year. Only 9% of those in the study were considered heavy users. Participants were followed for over 8 years as part of the study and took intelligence and memory tests throughout the study. When the results were finally tabulated, researchers found that there were large initial differences between the groups, with the current marijuana smokers performing worse on tests that required them to recall a list of words after various periods of time or remember numbers in the reverse order from the ones in which they were presented. But when the researchers controlled for factors like education and gender, all of those differences disappeared. The lower education levels of the cannabis users and the greater likelihood of them being male had made it look like marijuana had affected their intelligence. Men tend to do worse than women on tests of verbal intelligence, while women generally do worse on math tests. The relative weighting of the tests made the impact of cannabis use look worse than it was. Toward the end of the study, researchers explored whether quitting cannabis would affect the one difference that remained, the poor performance by heavy users on tests that required immediately recall of a list of nouns. They found that heavy users who had quit by the end of the study were no longer distinguishable on this measure than those who had never used cannabis. The research was done at the Center of Mental Health Research in Australia National University. They concluded that any adverse effects on cognitive functions either appear to be related to pre-existing factors or are reversible even after extended periods of use. Other studies that had found that cannabis has a lasting negative effect on cognition may have been confounded by the fact that many were tested only after abstaining for a day or two. They concluded that performances on those tests may have been affected by either residual cannabis in the system or irritability or other effects of withdrawal. Other researchers conclude that the stupid stoner image itself can impair some performance, with subjects essentially living down to what's expected of them. The research was published in the medical journal Addiction.
And we'll be bringing this up with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our cannabis science segment here at half past. But geez, how many of these things do we have to disprove? I mean, two words, Carl Sagan. Right? Guy works at Jet Propulsion Laboratory, major NASA researcher for 4 decades, and a regular cannabis consumer. I mean, it didn't seem to affect this guy's cognitive functioning any. And, you know, these stupid things we hear, can't cross your eyes, and green tongue, and now we can't remember lists of words or numbers or patterns in certain order. Well, you know what? I had a nice little purple strain before we began the show, and let me see what I can do here. ZYXWVUTSRQOPNM LKIHJGFEDCBA. There we go. Alphabet backwards. There's one, another one of your famous impairment tests. This is everything they try to put up as chronic marijuana smokers or any sort of marijuana use leading to a detriment. If these things were really true, we wouldn't need the studies by now. It would be something that would be patently obvious. We'd see cancer wards filled with cannabis smokers. We'd see chronically unemployed people who can't put put a thought together among cannabis smokers. But what we find is that cannabis smokers are employed. Cannabis smokers do just as well in tests. Aside from the legal consequences of using the cannabis itself, their lives turn out just about the same as everyone else. After 5,000 years of adult use and the past 40 years of heavy use in this culture, we would have seen some results by now. The fact that we don't have the bodies proves to me that cannabis is far safer than anything else out there available.
What do you think about a break?
I think a break is very important. We've got guests in the studio, so we'll make it an extra special break. We'll be back and get your daily Toker tunes right after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Hey, is it 420 yet? This is Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine, and you're tuned into Normal's Audio Stack.
You want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name, just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
Liberate your mind. Liberate your mind. Liberate your mind. Liberate your mind. That's what you got to do. Liberate your mind.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do it.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, we're picking one out of our archives here, a group called Catch a Fire, and NorCal Perps is our new editor for the Irie Wednesday, but he's out camping. I understand he's out in the wilderness, so that's cool. Get you camping on. And Rolla J was telling me they got a new song uploaded for us, but we didn't get to it in time, so we're just going to go ahead with this one. This is Catch a Fire with Irie for your Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tunes.
Down in there.
Copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, it's Wednesday and it's time to discuss our cannabis science segment here with Dr. Mitch. And I hope you're staying cool out there in Albany.
Fortunately, at least it's cool in my house.
Well, that's all that counts, right? Okay. How's the week been for you, Doctor?
Oh, it's been a real delight. My wife and I got a little time away, but it's good to be back in time for the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got a couple of studies coming at us here to lead off here, both from Down Under. And Kerry reported the first one today, which was having to do with, in Australia, again, a study that showed no long-term cognitive impairment among chronic cannabis users. And then one that came out earlier this week that said that chronic cannabis users were more likely to use other drugs like cocaine or heroin. So I don't care which order. Do you want to tackle those?
Sure thing. The one about the neuropsych deficits is one that I'm really happy about, of course, because anytime we see that cannabis is essentially harmless to cognitive functioning, at least when intoxication is over, is always good news. Usually these end up with no results because the samples are small or they didn't use very hard tests or things like that, and that's really not the case in this study. I feel like the sample is not only representative but large enough that if something was there, they definitely would have found it, and that they used tests that are hard enough so you can't just say, oh, well, anybody would have gotten all these right or something like that. So that's been a real nice contribution to the literature.
Yeah, and one of the things they mentioned in the story, too, was that something you've mentioned before, the ability to remember long lists of random nouns.
It's funny how, I mean, you do get on a few studies these small effects between users and non-users, but it's just not something that's particularly meaningful. Even if you were an air traffic controller, when do you have to come up with the 11th word on a list?
Yeah, exactly. It seems ridiculous to me. All right, so that's that one study, you know, no long-term cognitive impairment. This other study saying that the people that use cannabis more frequently and for longer periods of time throughout their 20s tended to be more likely to use cocaine, heroin, and other drugs. Have you seen that one?
It's I've only read the abstract, but this is not a finding that usually blows me away. What happens a lot of times in data sets like this is there's one small subset of the sample who likes to do everything. And if you ask them, you find out they also, you know, they don't wear their seatbelts, they love to stand in line extra long for the front car or the roller coaster. And this is really something about personality, not something about cannabis. And that tacit assumption that cannabis is leading people to use hard drugs the way salt makes you thirsty or something like that is clearly not the case. It is true that there are some folks who just like to do everything wild, and what a surprise, they end up making it look like cannabis precedes hard drugs and might be causal.
Yeah, and especially when you consider the fact that so many more people use cannabis and it's so much more available, that the thrill seeker, the first drug they're most likely to encounter is probably someone that's smoking pot at a party or something. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
Exactly, and what's funny is some of these studies, actually, if they're done in like crack neighborhoods and things like that, you find folks are using the hard drugs before cannabis. We always talk about Allen Ginsberg, how heroin led him to marijuana use. And, you know, it's things like that, that this just whatever's available tends to be the thing that these folks do first is a product of just availability, not anything inherently psychopharmacological.
All right. And we want to remind everyone we're taking your questions here for our cannabis science segment. Just get them in on the chat there, and Cannabis Carrie will pick them up and relay them to us. Or you can dial in live at 971-533-7111. Another part of this study, you know, had to do, you know, discussing the progression of people's use of cannabis, and they kind of remarked how most people that use cannabis pick it up in their early, you know, in their late teens or early 20s, and pretty much stop using by the time they hit 30. So, what does that tell us about this so-called super addictive skunk weed out there?
Well, what's curious is if this really were some pharmacological phenomenon, then we wouldn't see not only this rapid decrease as life events change, but the essential self-regulatory aspect of it. Nobody goes into therapy at 30 and says, oh my God, I'm out giving hand jobs to try to raise money for my cannabis problem, right?
Yeah.
Instead, it's just like, oh, usually I've got new work obligations, often there are children in the picture now, and folks either decrease or essentially eliminate their use spontaneously without any outrageous withdrawal, without any crazy turning to outrageous treatment techniques, but just a, oh, hey, I'm busy. I guess I'm not going to buy any this month.
Yeah, and this is something, you know, that I've taken a look at in the normal big book of marijuana facts that I'm putting together, and that is the people that go to rehab. You know, we've brought up many times the subject of drug courts that are sentencing people to rehab, whether they need it or not. And one of the interesting stats that I found came from the treatment episode data set, and I wanted to get your comment on this, and it had to do with the sources of referral for drug treatment. I took a look at, you know, people that indicated cannabis and other drugs and alcohol as a primary or secondary drug that they were going in for, and I found that the cannabis-only smokers, the self-referrals, that is people that, you know, turned themselves in for treatment because they thought they had a problem, was only like 13% of the people in rehab, whereas 59% were there because of a criminal court, a drug court, or a DUI charge. When I looked at it of just drugs only, people that didn't admit cannabis at all, it was like 47% self-admittance. So, again, I just wondered what you thought about those statistics.
What's curious about that is it's really, really saying that the number of people who are in treatment is not an index of the danger or addictiveness of the substance so much as a side effect of the legal system. And it also is curious when you can get data sets, when you actually ask these folks who are in treatment for alleged cannabis dependence, when was the last time you used? A lot of them haven't used in weeks by the time they get there because they know they're going in for treatment anyway.
Yeah.
And it ends up totally undermining the whole system. So somebody who's like addicted to crack and who could probably really benefit from a brief inpatient stay is out on the street while this idiot is basically taking up a bed because some judge said, hey, you got to go. It's a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. And that other stat, that's something you mentioned too, is the people who end up in rehab here, and I'm showing the charts on the webcam right now, of people that were admitted to rehab, 37% gave alcohol as a primary or secondary substance, 21% marijuana. So marijuana was number two, and I can imagine with alcohol, you'd have a lot of people wanting to go to rehab for various reasons. But then the people who went in for cannabis, 37% of them hadn't used in the past month, and another 17% had only used 1 to 3 times that month. So again, so much for this, you know, deadly addictive drug that we've got to, you know, save people from. It's just ridiculous. All right, let's get to some questions here. We've got a caller calling in from the 760 area code. We'll add to the conference here. 760, you're on the air with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. What's your question?
Hi, is this, am I on the air?
You're on the air. What's your question for Dr. Mitch?
Yeah, so lately we've seen a lot of evidence that people are switching from marijuana to things that are actually more harmful. So there have been these crazes about bath salts, K2, spice, salvia, divinorum. And I was wondering if there's any evidence that this could be reversed. In other words, that people could use relatively benign cannabis to get off of harder drugs. So maybe they could get off of drugs that are really, really nasty, like, well, probably not heroin, but I'm not sure which ones, but heroin, cocaine, even
sure,
alcohol.
I'm happy to speak to that. Felipe Lucas, who we all know and love, who's up in Canada and doing some wonderful work up there, just sent me some data that we've analyzed of basically folks who go to various dispensaries in Canada and in California, and just a little under half of the folks we found suggested that they are using cannabis in a sense in a substitution for either alcohol, an illicit drug, or a pharmaceutical drug that they felt that they were running into trouble with. And it's curious because the reasoning they give for this movement is always fewer side effects. So here is at least some compelling first-line evidence that people at least think that this is helping them. And we have seen this in the past, but nobody wants to go anywhere near this with United States federal money to suggest that cannabis might ease withdrawal or even make the change from the addiction to hard drugs to a more healthy lifestyle easier. And it's such a controversial idea, but slowly but surely the conversation has started and we are getting some evidence that's consistent with it.
All right. That's an excellent question. Thanks for your call. We appreciate that. And we've got another question here from Herbal Supplement wanting to know, does cannabis have any negative or positive effects on those diagnosed with pulmonary arterial hypertension?
Pulmonary arterial hypertension I haven't seen any data specifically focused on that. Generally, you know, exposure to smoked cannabis couldn't be a great idea for something like that. We do see, you know, folks who use the vaporizer tend to have some of the respiratory things that might be associated with that. And then hypertension tends to drop, the blood pressure tends to decrease in response to cannabis, but it's generally rather short-lived, so it's not the kind of thing that you can count on for decreasing, say, high blood pressure regularly. Obviously, all the things that we would recommend more generally, decreasing salt, increasing activity, making sure your exercise is good, getting sleep, and all those things would certainly be a more frontline way to go with that.
Dr. Mitch, you know, I'm hypertensive after the kidney transplant. How long is short-lived?
What's curious is after about 3 hours, you usually see the hypertension return, depending upon dosage and size and things like that. But also, because heart rate tends to increase, but blood pressure decreases, and not a lot of other hypertension meds do that, people are apprehensive about trying to rely on it as antihypertensive medication.
Yeah, I don't rely on it completely, but I use it in conjunction with minoxidil. And minoxidil seemed to work okay, but in conjunction with marijuana works great. So as far as Dr. Mitch is concerned, I just need to smoke every 3 hours.
But the minoxidil sure made you hairy.
Yes, it sure did.
Oh, my God.
It was good. I turned into a great ape.
Nice side effect. All right. We've also got a question here that kind of goes on a personal side for you, Dr. Mitch. How did you get interested in cannabis science as a specific niche?
It's curious because what happened was when I was teaching at USC, the drugs and human behavior class there, I was really an alcohol expert and went in and I thought everybody's going to really want to know about alcohol and I'm going to be the man. And I got there and they said, no, we don't care about that. We really want to know about pot. And so I dug in that literature and that's what turned into the book Understanding Marijuana. And then I came back all ready to tell everybody about marijuana and they said, no, now all we care about is ecstasy.
Well, was there any sort of nomenclature destiny involved in being named Early Wine and going into alcohol?
I got to confess, and as you know, Fred Blow, the cocaine researcher, is also in that book.
It's amazing how those kind of things work out. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany and taking your questions in our chat room and by phone at 971-533-7111. If you've got your question, just get them in there, and Carrie will pick them up and send them to us through the chat. All right, we have a question here asking, can marijuana cause you to have panic attacks? I experience it occasionally, even with the same bud. Like he's used the same type of different strain. And this is something we hear from our opponents a lot, too. You know, marijuana is going to cause panic attacks. Tell us about it.
It's funny because we do see this in a sense of at least a subacute anxiety reaction in some folks. And I think the clincher is to pay attention to strain and dosage, but also the environment. A lot of folks who email me about this seem to be basically getting high kind of automatically, like, oh, it's Friday night, I'm supposed to get high, and they don't really pay attention to the environment they're in and don't really get to enjoy their buzz, and then suddenly realize, oh, wait, I didn't really want to get high right before giving a speech at my grandmother's funeral. What a surprise that would lead to a panic attack, you know? And I think the clincher is paying attention to environmental contributors and making sure you've really set things up so that your use of the plant is going to be as enjoyable as possible.
Yeah, and one of those environmental contributors would be the possibility you can be arrested for it. So, again, remember your set and setting. And, you know, I'd panic a little, too, when I see red and blue lights in the back window there. So makes a little sense. All right, we got a caller calling in from my home state of Idaho, 208 area code. What's your question for Dr. Mitch Earlywine?
Okay, here's my question. It's pretty basic. If I had three different types of cannabis, all bringing in a THC percentage rating of, let's say, 15% each, and I combine those three types of cannabis together and consume that, am I essentially smoking a THC percentage of 45%? Or does it have to average out?
No, this just averages out for THC. The advantage of those kinds of mixes, however, could be that other cannabinoids and flavonoids and terpenoids and things that we haven't measured and don't know as well may be able to contribute to, say, the relief from symptoms or the subjective experience in a way that individual strains might not.
Yeah, interesting question. Thanks for your call. Appreciate that. And that's something that we need to know more about here as we move on in cannabis industry and medical cannabis, is knowing more about these other cannabinoids. I was just reading something, I think Fred Gardner had put it up in O'Shaughnessy's, about the terpenoids and the flavonoids in cannabis. You know, and he mentioned that cannabinoids themselves are odorless, but these other flavonoids and terpenoids that we generally get the taste and aroma from as cannabis consumers may also be showing part of the medical benefit. Do you have any more information on that?
Ethan Russo wrote a paper about this fairly recently, and some of it may be, you know, the individual flavonoids themselves, but also the interaction between them and the cannabinoids is incredibly intriguing, and we're just starting to uncover some of those. We've talked before about how cannabidiol can basically take that edge off pure THC, so you don't see the kind of psychotic reactions that you see from, say, Marinol when folks are using cannabis that has a lot of cannabidiol. But it looks like at least one of the flavonoids may also be capable of something comparable, and it's just a wide open field as soon as you start mixing substances that way in the human body.
Yeah, it was really interesting. They mentioned, you know, limonene, which is something that you also find in lemons, and pinene, which is, you know, a pine needle kind of scent, and I'm really interested to see how these studies turn out. This is fascinating stuff to me. Okay, folks, we gotta call it a day here. We got time for one more question with Dr. Mitch, but if you didn't get time to get your question answered, you can join us next week on our Wednesday Cannabis Science segment, or send your email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. Last question is short and sweet. Dr. Mitch, were your parents hippies?
Indeed, my parents were hippies and sat around in a big circular rug with a giant bong made of a Chianti bottle that had like a 15-foot neck. So I think that may be part of my, shall we say, interest in the substance of cannabis.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for being with us.
Looking forward to it. Bye.
All right. When we come back, we are going to talk cannabis with Cannabliss's Matt right here in Portland, Oregon at Roll J Studios. Stay tuned. We're back right after this.
Talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. At Normal, we've been prepping for this debate for 40 years.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah!
Radical rant.
Welcome back, folks. We are in the process of docking John's pay.
Yeah, that was John's fault. We're not doing a radical rant.
We're not
rant.
Doing a rant right now. Although I've got one written. I'm ready to go with it, but we'll save it until later.
Yeah, you guys will hear it tomorrow. It's great.
Yeah, but we've got a live guest in the studio here joining us, Matt from the Cannabis Club right here in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
There we go.
There we go. There's the mic.
Glad
to have you here. And how long have you been in business here in Oregon?
I've been in business here in Oregon for 7 months as of the 15th of this last month.
Are you originally an Oregonian? Did you come here?
No, I'm not. My father's side of the family is all from here in the Portland area.
Oh, okay. Okay. Where are you coming from?
I grew up in Flagstaff, Arizona, actually.
Oh, right on. Right on. Okay. So is this your first foray into anything cannabis related as far as a business enterprise?
No, actually. I started my first business in this industry. I was a commercial grower out in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
I grew for a few dispensaries out there. And as we all know, the system started to change pretty drastically. And I thought that it got away more from, you know, being for the patients and got more towards big business.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of irritating, so I decided to go off on my own tangent and come and see the family and try and start my own little trek.
Okay. So Cannabliss is a club here in Oregon. And for people listening, you know, outside of the state and in different medical marijuana states, should understand that Oregon doesn't have a specific, you know, dispensary law where it's regulated and we have, you know, all the rules and regulations that go with that. And so people have, you know, tried to find ways to help patients out so hamstrung by these laws that don't really recognize it as a business entity. So how are you maintaining this business? How are you getting by in this environment?
Well, basically what I do is, you know, a lot of these clubs, they open up and they want to supply their own cannabis. Well, as we all know, the laws here in Oregon are written a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I actually have a private club. I don't supply any cannabis whatsoever. What I do is I allow local growers to come into my place and they're able to cater to the patients that come through my doors. So it creates a community as well as, you know, a very large you know, information hub, essentially.
Yeah. And the local growers, you know, they're all registered cardholders because Oregon has a 3-card system. You can be a patient, you can have a caregiver, and then you can have a third-party grower. And under the law, you're allowed to reimburse that third-party grower for their utilities and expenses.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. So so this is, you know, the Cannabliss is just one of a few clubs now that are open here. Recently, of course, we've told the stories of the raids, not just in, you know, in Oregon, we had one in Aloha, but also, you know, in all these other medical marijuana states, Spokane and Montana and California, of course. So with these recent memos kind of threatening cannabis business, how does that make you feel? How do you feel about the continuing business you're doing here?
You know, I'm actually very comfortable in continuing with my business. I view what I do as a positive thing, and that means a lot more to me than, you know, a threatening letter from,
yeah,
from you know, a federal entity. You know, some of these places that, like you mentioned, that have been raided and things like that, they kind of put themselves out there maybe a little too much, or, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, they put their necks out there and somebody came out and got them. I think that these letters are more of an empty threat rather than anything else, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. And we're here in Multnomah County, which, for the people that don't know the geography of Oregon, Multnomah County is, you know, very progressive, liberal, and pretty much the most, I would say, cannabis-friendly county as far as the medical marijuana program goes here. The one that was raided was in Washington County, which is the mirror opposite of Multnomah County as far as prosecutorial zeal on medical marijuana out there. Mm-hmm. So you feel relatively safe in where you're at?
You know, I do feel very safe in where I'm at. I actually, when we first opened up, I invited somebody from the district attorney's office to come into my business, as well as local law enforcement and things like that, and brought them in and showed them exactly what we do. And as you said, you know, Multnomah County, lucky for us, is one of the places, the few places, which is sad, you know, here in the States, that actually is for the people of their community, which is it's really nice to belong to. You know, it seems like Multnomah County, our government here, our local government, actually listens to what the people say, and they actually want to make the people happy, whereas other places it seems like they're using their local government as a stepping stone to get up to, you know, a federal ranking or
right,
something.
An audition, if
absolutely,
you will.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We're speaking with Matt from Cannabliss, a private medical patient cannabis club here in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, I'm wondering if you could – do you have a website, first of all? Can people learn more about your business?
Absolutely. Our website is www.thecannabliss.com. And you can feel free to check it out. It's you know, it's a basic, gives you the basic gist of what we do, a couple pictures.
So what would people, what would a patient here in Portland, what would they expect when they first walk in the door? Is there entertainment? Is there stuff to do? What's involved in that club?
You know what we have is essentially, I'm a private club first and foremost, is we are a private club that caters to medical marijuana cardholders. You know,
so only cardholders can get in the door.
Absolutely, okay. It's not open to the public. Patients, growers, caregivers, they're all welcome to come in and hang out. And you know, we've supplied a pool table. I've got a movie theater upstairs. I've got, you know, a bunch of flat screens, almost always on ESPN. I'm a sports buff, so so I got to watch it.
I tell you, bong hits in college football, there is nothing better.
That's all we do.
Yeah, no, it's you know, we've just tried to create a, you know, a nice, relaxed environment for people to come and feel comfortable and be able to, you know, chat with other like-minded individuals, which is actually proven to be a really cool thing. A lot of people don't see that the cannabis community as a whole, as a subculture, there's a lot of people that are within that community that own their own businesses and that are doing productive things in society. And, you know, it's actually created kind of a sustainable economy almost with being able to put these people together. I've seen more than one business relationship be established by just people randomly meeting at my place. So, I mean, you can come in and you can see all walks of life in there. And also you get access to some of the best growers that are in Oregon.
I can attest to that.
No doubt about that. And you're housed in a classic firehouse, right?
Absolutely. A fire station was originally built in 1892, and I was lucky enough to get a hold of it. So we've done a little remodeling on the inside, and, you know, it's
a little. You've done a hell of a job up there. You know how folks, if you go into like an old firehouse, they'll have the fireman's pole. You know, so slide down the fireman's pole, and you guys have like this plexi. It's in the upstairs mm-hmm. theater area, right? And the big plexiglass over the fireman's over where the pole should be. So that's I can.
There's a second pole. Don't worry. There is another pole that you could slide.
You get
down
nice and side. Baked and walked over that hole. It could really freak you out.
it freaked me out the first time. I gotta admit.
It's safe. It's safe.
It's totally safe.
It's perfectly safe. It's just trippy, man. So how's the reaction been from your neighbors in the area?
You know, it's actually been really good. We have a pretty strong welcoming from our community. We happen to have a lot of restaurants in our area, which is, you know,
they appreciate
the excess business that they're getting. You know, and we really have had no problems whatsoever as far as any local, you know, local businesses or anybody that lives within our neighborhood, and basically it's attributed to just open communication. That's the biggest thing, is open communication. I talk with them, they talk with me. If there's problems, I fix them. If I have problems with them, I address them about them. You know, it's relatively simple. It's pretty easy.
You know, we're on this show 5 days a week. We've got a dedicated audience of podcast listeners and live listeners who are, well, I can call them the choir, right? They're on our side. So for the squares out there, for the people who aren't on our side, for the people who are against medical marijuana, or maybe they're for medical marijuana but think what we're doing is a shady back way of legalizing or whatever, what do you think is the biggest misconception they have, and how do you change that in their minds?
You know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't ever argue with anybody that's not willing to listen. And that's the biggest issue, I think, is closed-mindedness on the situation. I think that, you know, the generation that's coming up and coming forward is a lot more open-minded than past generations, which have caused, you know, essentially the prohibition on marijuana and, you know, not actually seeing it as anything that has any medical value, which we all know is absolutely incorrect. As far as addressing those people, It's rather difficult. You know, there's only so many that are willing to listen, and the ones that are willing to listen normally are pretty easy to talk to. The ones that aren't are just, it's bad. That's it.
Good, you're bad.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. It's bad. You're dumb. Like, no, actually, I'm not.
A successful business owner doing quite well. So, you know, of course. The other thing too here is with this, the changes in the law. You know, this legislative session, we saw the Oregon legislature try to, you know, really clamp down tight on medical marijuana, come up with all sorts of terrible restrictions and regulations on it. We've got a couple ballot initiatives. One's the OCTA, you know, legalize for everyone, tax mm-hmm. and regulate. There's another one that's just drop all criminal penalties and let's go from there. What changes would you like to see? Would you like to see medical marijuana as it is, change medical marijuana, or move on to legalization?
You know, honestly, what I'd like to see is a medical, you know, more medical laws being established. I would also like to see, you know, initiatives moving forward towards legalization as well. I think that there's, you know, there are definitely different things associated with marijuana use that need to be addressed.
All right. We'll talk about that more in hour two. We got to call it here for hour one for you podcast listeners. So thanks for joining us for Wiz Kalico, Cannabis Carry, and Ganja John. I'm Radical Russ, and hour two, we'll stick around with Matt and talk a little bit more, and maybe a little radical rant coming up as well. For those of you on the podcast, thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.